Without further ado, that's Crazy Talk. We're all sick with it. Episode 4, Big Bang Theory, God Body, Part 2. Let's get it. Welcome back. Hey, listen, we about to get into it. Big Bang Theory, God Body. I am God Body. You are God Body. We are God Body. Why I keep saying that? I mentioned that in the previous episode. We come from out of nothing, practically. I mean, obviously, we come from something. I mean, at the very basic, I mean, we get down to the lowest. We got the sperm cell, got the egg cell, but we come from cells and evolve and develop into complete, free, independent thinking, independently moving, different varieties of human being. God body. Like, it takes two versions, the different genders, the separations, but the balance, we need the two different to come together to create another one, male or female. That's some God body shit right there. I mean, you look at the history, we all come from the same origin. Those of us who are human, we same roots. Listen, I know I'm kind of like saying some stuff that makes people think, well, what does this have to do with the origin of coming out of the water and evolving from tadpoles into apes and then chimpanzees and eventually human beings? I'm not really getting at that. Bang. Sorry to fuck your world up. I personally don't believe I ever was a monkey. I don't give a fuck what the racist honkies called my folks, but never came for no motherfucker. I mean, I like bananas. Don't get it twisted. Who doesn't? I don't know. People without taste buds, maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, never came from motherfucking chimps or nothing like that. But I definitely came from a sperm cell and an egg cell. God body, just like every other human on this planet. So it amazes me at times when I look at the experience of being taught to believe in a God, and then not even just a God, but like one God, the God, all-powerful, absolute God who believes in truth, justice in some kind of way, maybe not quite American, but something democratic, right? Like, where the fuck is he at, man? Is he being like extra democratic about the process of fixing shit? I meant mentioned in the other episode, 2,000 plus years of waiting on this God to rectify this situation that he allows to exist, but is supposed to somehow be controlling, but he doesn't condone, but he does through permissive will, but not by direct will. Listen, this is the shit that fucked with my head for probably about 20 years. Let it fuck with yours for 20 plus or more. And you'll be like so many others. Going to your grave, hopefully not, but probably likely to teach your children and their offspring the same shit to fuck with their heads. This shit needs to stop. And I mean, if you think of just being emotional about it because I reached a certain point in life that, you know, I'm just angry because the world hasn't worked the way that I expected it to. Let's be clear on a few things. I've gotten past being angry about the fact that the world did not work out the way I expected it to. I'm pretty good on that. I'm dead serious, okay? But this is definitely not like me lashing out. This is like me really scratching my motherfucking head. Like, I'm trying to make sense of this. I'm trying to get clarity on these things that have been fundamental to like my existence as a human being. And I would recommend, if you haven't started this process, give it a try. Give it a go. It'll be worth your while. I mean, revolutionizing. Because, I mean, shit, you got enough stuff probably working against you as it is. I know for me personally, as a man of color in America, you know, they on some old outdated shit where they hate motherfuckers because they only see black and white. Like, get with the fucking century. Ben got Technicolor. This shit is 4K now. Like, motherfuckers can see clearly. There's no such thing as a black person, even though some real dark, dark, dark motherfucker. There ain't no such thing as a black person. And it damn sure ain't no such thing as a white person. Even though, some of these albino motherfuckers and some of these Scandinavians and shit is like, damn close. But they not white, though. Like, I mean, you compare them to like a piece of paper, some shit like that, like, it, nah. It's fucking stone, onyx stone, like a real piece of onyx. Nah, people ain't black, you know what I'm saying? They just dark as shit. The reality of it is, we all got body, though. So, you know, I asked the question in the previous episode about how old are you and how long have you been living on this earth thinking the way that you think currently? Because I will be inclined to assume, if I could take the liberty, I'd be inclined to think that, you know, whatever you believe, a big part of it has been influenced by shit you've been taught. Not to mention, you know, you learn how to fucking speak because somebody teaches you that shit. But I mean, I don't want to get into it. I'm not even trying to argue that. I'm just saying. So this bang that's about to occur right now is really like, yo, let's shake up this context that we've been looking at the world through. Because I just want to keep it real with myself first and foremost, but it's helpful to do it with other people around me at the same time. I think the two go hand in hand. So it's like, I don't know, like, what's really good? Like, God body. There's no emphasis placed on the power, the majesty, the I don't know, the like, it's just awesome, the fact that two cells can come together from two different beings and create a brand new being. But one that becomes self-sustaining, like its own life, as we use the word, its own existence, having its own experience. But the unfortunate part is, with all the potential that experience and that life could hold and possess, it's going to come into this world and be fucking run through this motherfucking tri-headed or quadruple-headed or quintuple-headed or however many heads this religious monster has, because it's like, no matter where you look, it's somewhere in the world, it's an existence. It's an organization in existence that's telling you how to fucking live as a human. Now, here's my fucking question.
What does it mean to be human?
Come from inside you, always right on.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Cornel West. And thank you, Mr. Miyagi. Us. Thank you. I appreciate your contributions. Listen, I told you I'm not going to just always refer to the comedic philosophical ideologies, for points of reference. But I mean, these are thoughts that I can connect with. I've had these thoughts myself, like, yo, what does it mean to be human? Like, and who's supposed to define that shit for you? And like, shouldn't our, let's say, compass for figuring that out really start internally? Because we all live very different experiences within the same phenomenon or experience. Series of events occur, but we all see them, experience them differently. Like, so shouldn't we really, as human beings, be focusing inwardly? So that's part of the purpose of this podcast. It's part of me focusing inwardly. But for those of you who are tuned in, I appreciate you. I appreciate your contributions. Thank you for riding with me in this journey. Hey, listen, I invite you to give me feedback. My whole thing is, let's just keep respect. You know what I'm saying? But that being said, like, I know that this process has to be done from within. That being said, you still got to understand the world in which you're working in, the world in which you're growing and evolving, but properly, correctly. Now, here's my thing. I mentioned this at the end of the last podcast. Two things I wanted you to think about. That there's like these store these this misinformation that we've been given. Okay? Now, I'm gonna give it to you in reverse, the second bit of information, okay? Because it's severe, but it's not as severe. But when you look at it, you're gonna see the impact in the series or in the chronology in which it occurs. So here's the second bit of misinformation that you're fed as a person or human being in this world. It's your age. Said this before, it's your age, AGE, how old you are. Think about the fact that as a human being, you got a 9-month period of development with inside the mother's stomach, womb, whatever. 9 whole months, which according to our calculations, that's 3/4 of a year. That's almost a whole year of your life that you are like totally given, no, that shit don't matter, that don't count. Your first birthday, you're one. Huh? Biologically speaking, we're all at least 3/4 of a year older than we celebrate or recognize. And this is something that's practiced, I'm pretty sure, like worldwide. I mean, if I'm wrong, please, somebody tag me in and let me fill me in and let me know. Tag me, post something, reply to this podcast. Let me know that I'm wrong if you know something I don't know. But don't worry, I'm gonna go double check. I double check everything that informs me. So I don't got a problem with being wrong. It happens. It's gonna happen in life. I'm okay. I got past that. That being said, I hope y'all do too. But just know I'm not trying to mislead anybody. I'm doing genuine research. I'm looking for answers to questions that are occurring to me naturally. But realizing this, we all celebrate, until it's proven otherwise, we all celebrate our lives, and we disregard or discount like a major significant part of it. You don't get through the first fucking 3/4 of your, I mean, the first 9 months of your life, the first 3/4 of a year, you don't get through that period of life. You don't got nothing else to celebrate, my main man. There is no number one you don't get out. Come out that bitch a stillborn, and let's see how we do with a whole life's history after that. Gonna be something like, yeah, a toe tag in a body bag in a motherfucking trash bag. Sorry to be insensitive to the concept of the fetal life, but I'm just saying the reality of it is we as a society, and I'm talking about damn near worldwide, human beings, we disregard the most important part of our development. Not only that, we disregard that the dynamic power, the fact that we come from these two fucking cells, two separate organisms. Unity is motherfucking elemental and key to human existence, my main man. So now I'm not just trying to be idealistic or as somebody accused me of being an ideologue, but here's my thoughts on that. I think we all ideologues, but I ain't even get into it because that's a whole nother episode that I'm saving for that ass. Troll me if you want. I ain't in no rush to come get a body bag. I catch you when everybody forgot about it. That way, when I'm the motherfucking last person on the list to be suspected, I can live my life comfortably. You dead. Bang. Or is you alive? Sick with it. Let me get back to business, though. What I'm saying is this. The second bit of misinformation that we've been fed is about our age. I mean, when you get into all the other elements about your existence and your conception and all that, this shit is deep. It's funny how we're trained to think of ourselves as being such a unique creature, which in some ways we are. But, I mean, if you look at the word unique, I mean, that's why we have categories for animals and for creation, because each of these features is distinct to this particular group. So maybe our uniqueness is not as unique as we would like to uphold it as, put it on that pedestal and worship it as, oh, man is the greatest. Man is fucking shit up right now. So, man, let's get this shit together. You heard? Let's start with thinking about this piece of misinformation we've been fed. We're a lot more connected to this world than we want to believe. Trying to look for alternatives like manufacturing new forms of food out of some synthetic shit? Yeah, go ahead with that, man. Go the fuck ahead with that. If you ain't never experienced poverty, that's probably why you think that's a good fucking option. You ain't never had no motherfucking government cheese. You ain't never had no government powdered milk. Just add water. You ain't never had no government peanut butter. Y'all motherfuckers better get y'all shit together. Like, come on, man. And then for the people who are just idly just like floating along like this shit is not going to affect them, like keep believing it. Keep believing that shit if you think. Go ahead. You'll probably be the first one to get fucked over. I'm sorry for my vulgarity, but not really, because I'm not sorry for the fact that life can be vulgar and aggressive and unrelenting, like relentless, I guess, you know. Forgive me, I didn't plan to go off on this little tangent, but I'm just saying, I know some of y'all got them virgin eardrums in here, and I say the F words and the S words and all the other letters that y'all want to put in front of a word. Like, come on, man, I didn't make this English language, and I didn't pick and choose which words would be profane. I didn't get a word the fucking means. But I promise you, when I use them, you get the message. Get this message. Think about how, as human beings, like, come on, we a lot more like amphibians than we ever really considered ourselves. We got this real weird reproductive process that, like, I mean, yeah, other animals do it too, but I'm just saying, talking about human beings, we like to think of ourselves as being not like other animals. But when the human baby is born, he got to be, like, first of all, the sperm is very bit like a tadpole. Swimming up to the fucked up the fallopian tube to the egg. Like, come on, man. That shit looks just like, you ever look at some shit on science. That's what you look like, a National Geographic fucking episode under the microscope or something. Like, it's very much like the rest of nature. Not to mention that when the conception of the egg is fertilized, what may have you, the human is developing, it's inside the stomach. I mean, you know, first couple weeks practically, can't really tell what the fuck it is. That motherfucking thing growing in the mom's stomach could look anything like a human to a dog or a pig or something. By the way, I stand corrected. Last time I said in episode 3 that we shared like 50% of our DNA or genetic markers with the pig. I was wrong. I stand corrected. It's the fruit fly, which is like, oh shit, yeah, that makes me feel better. Fucking 50% of us human beings is, you know, similar to fruit flies. I'm sure motherfucking frogs eat fruit flies. Like, come on, man. This is really the circle of life, man. It really is. But we probably can really recreate a different precedent. I ain't saying necessarily that we're going to get the frogs to stop eating the fruit flies, but maybe we can make some synthetic fruit flies for them to eat. I don't know. That's not really the point of this episode. I'm just thinking outside the box because I'm looking for solutions, man. Trying to restore humanity, trying to restore creation. if you will, or at least the elements that are able to be restored. Because I swear to God, I feel like we headed towards like some real apocalyptic shit, man. That's another episode though, you know. But let's not ignore that this second bit of information we've been misfed, that these 9 months, they significant. I mean, that's where your DNA is going to work. That's where all the God body shit is fucking happening. Once you boop, pop out that motherfucker, bang, go to work. Time for you to reproduce. Time for you to make a mark on the world, but not necessarily mark up the world. You know, you got some kids, they like to color in between the lines, and some just, they don't figure that shit out. The kids that color in between the lines, we got to help the other kids out, man. Real shit. Even if that means we got to give them some type of special crayons and shit, like they came up with Crayola, got the shit where when you put the crayon on the page, that bitch can't even color outside the lines or marker. What? Like, come on. We got to do some shit like that for those. The rest of us as humanity who are a little bit artistically challenged. My bad, y'all. My bad. I'm just trying to keep it light. Because this shit is severe, man. When you think about how intense it is, man, that's just the whole world is walking around like, fuck my birth, fuck all that, yeah. But by the time you reach like 15, 16, you're like, oh, birthday, it's a party, all shit. And you like worship that period, that monumental experience is really imbalanced. And I think a lot of ways influenced by the dominant institutions, the dominant ideologies of our society. That said, I'm going to get into this second, which is the first, but it's actually the second. But I put first bit of misinformation we've been fed. It's on the age of civilization. Like, 2018 years. How are we sitting here talking about 2018 anything if we're considering it that that's the point of time frame that we're like keeping time? Like 2018, but we know the earth is older than that, so we're not attributing 2018 years since the earth was formed. Okay. Well, what about people? Not people. People, we know they're a couple hundred million, you know what I mean, years, I guess, 100,000, I don't know. Forgive me if I don't got the facts all together. I know what I read. If you don't like my information, you can always research it. I encourage that either way. But that being said, like, 2018 has got a point, but we're being misinformed about what that date really represents. So, you know, I guess the point I'm trying to get us to think about is, are we living out a worldview that we've gained firsthand, or is it secondhand? Now, as I put that question out there, I don't want to really sound like a Neanderthal, even though I know I can at times. I like to think of myself as being a little bit more, I don't know, refined, a little bit more debonair, if you will. But no, real shit though. I mean, like, I know that some things you can't learn firsthand. However, I'm also inclined to think that we put more faith in the things that we learn secondhand than we do in the things we learn firsthand. And as a result, on a social level, the way we interact with each other, like, we don't really believe the things that we should believe. That like right in front of us, but like we really are more inclined to believe the things that we probably should research deeper because they're so far away from us. But why? And I'm going back to the argument that because of the way our society is structured, especially depending on where you fall out in the socioeconomic structure of the world, so to speak, you're gonna get a different narrative. And those who reign at the top percent, you know, 1%, the power-wielding class, the establishment, as we like to call them in the hood, you know what I'm saying? Like to think that they have a little bit more insight on some of the information than some of us. However, holding that information is not really relevant as much as holding on to the power and the leverage they have by birth, by social dynamics, by chance, if you will. That all being said, you know, I'm not making an argument really for science or religion, nor am I making one against either. I'm really going back to, hey, science is supposed to hang on the concepts of testable theories and things that can be proven. But we also know science, when it is being fueled by commercialism and, you know, the quote-unquote powers that be, science may not always give you an accurate scientific breakdown. And we know, you know, when it's all said and done, I mean, as human beings, it's just not possible for us to know everything. I mean, we're not designed in that way. No more than, you know, the old cell phones were designed to do FaceTime. You know, they just didn't have that capacity. No more than, you know, record players, you know, were able to record music. They just weren't designed in that way. Not a good or bad thing. It's just the way it is. But that said, we, in our design, we have the ability to observe and to kind of analyze and break things down. And so, you know, I really want to challenge this, like, oh, what are you holding on to? And where did it come from? Because I swear, bang! That was your bang. That was your formation of the world as you've been living in it. And now, when you look at what it is you're trying to work through, not saying you created all the elements of it, but you're trying to work through it on somebody else's program, and that program might not really be compatible with yours, DNA, if you will. So, you know, something to think about. But, you know, I mean, like I said, it's all theory. I'm speculating, of course, in a lot of ways, but I know it's rational. And, you know, to go even further, if you will, I think it's a good chance that the world will end, you know, just as mysteriously as it began. And I'd even be willing to gamble that by the time we find anything close to all the answers, you know, it won't matter because it'll be too late. But that's it. You know, doomsday prediction aside, not saying the world will necessarily end in a catastrophic way. It's a possibility it can end in a quite peaceful way. Thing is, none of us want to die, right? I think that's part of the reason why we create these ideas and these institutions that we know could potentially live on to perpetuity, especially if others totally buy into them and are invested, because, you know, you figure, hey, if nothing else, this is going to take care of me and my family, right? But, you know, I don't know. That might be too human for some people who want to believe, you know. You know, but, I mean, I know the general public perception, they okay with it. We in the year 2018, and, you know, kind of like what Louis C.K. said, you know, in the first episode, I mean, episode 3, you know, the Christians won, they're winning. And you know, in the big scheme of the religious Olympics, Islam, they holding on to like a competitive second place, you know, and Judaism, they like a quiet but secretly significant and influential third place, you know. I mean, overall, the Abrahamic religions, it's like the triangle offense, you know, used by the world establishment to maintain the substantial qualitative advantage and control over the mass populace. And I mean, you can challenge that if you hold tightly to those tenets of those different faiths or whatever. But I mean, I'm not just talking about, you know, the trifecta, but, you know, I mean, right now Christianity is like Jordan, you know, Islam's like Pippin, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, who's gonna be the third person for Judaism? Which one? Probably Kukoc, right? Or we gonna give it to Dennis Rodman? Somebody who, you know, they doing damage, but they just seem really insignificant, and it's like you only hear about them ever so often. Like, you know, Kukoc, who heard his name since I just last said it, right? Yeah, but you remember he was a part of that team, though. Won 3 championships with the Bulls, right? Sorry, some of y'all might not be into sports. This ain't a sports podcast. I do that on a Mixing It Up sports podcast with attorney Aaron Mixon Esquire. But that's another thing, another time. That being said, man, the reality of it is, we're humans, and human beings are totally involved with the birth of everything that human beings experience, minus the sun and the moon and the stars, right? Okay, but we're totally involved with them because we all experience them. So now what? Yo, I'm gonna play it, your boy. That good. No, real talk. I mean, the social dynamics, the economic struggles, and the different nations, and, you know, oh, we're running out of space, we're running out of food, we're running out of water, we're running out of. Yeah, if we keep doing shit the same way we've been doing it. What are you talking about, sick with it? I mean, nobody thinks about changing the way that things are done, really. I mean, of course, the people talk about it, like, in politics and all that shit, but, right? But, like, when you look at the fundamental components of what makes your society go, like, ain't nobody really trying to change that shit, because once you get to that place where you're an adult and you done figured out how you want to get ahead in that shit, it's like, let it go. What do you mean? I mean, there's some, but usually those people tend to be, like, I don't know, like homeless, or, you know, sometimes psychologically, you know, mental health issues. Like, it's not the norm, you know what I'm saying? It's like the exception to the rule. But that doesn't have to be. But what is happening is you're seeing an increase worldwide in how the impoverished class is growing. Not to mention people who are like being displaced because of the wars and things that are still going on in 2018 as if it was the year, 2018 AD, as if it was like the year 218 BC or something. Like, it's still tribal, still sociocultural in nature, economic, and it's like, it's a big fucking game of, let's put that one side against the other side, but there's somebody in the middle getting the fucking benefits of both sides fighting. Or is that just me? Is that just my perception? I don't know. I mean, history is full of examples. It's full of examples of it. I'm going to get back into the history slant real quick, but I'm going to point out some things to consider. Like, what do you really know about your leaders, those you celebrate and follow? What do you really know about those things that you say you believe with your whole heart? When I was a young kid and it was exposed or introduced to me, Christianity was like, I was all in because I figured, hey, my parents wouldn't mislead me. This is what you're supposed to do. I'm sure a lot of people can relate with that, relate to that, whatever. But if you had a broader context of the action of these leaders that gave you a more personal understanding, you think you would still celebrate them? I mean, like, if you had a better understanding of the religion, even, of its birth, of its origins, like, what actions took place to help make it happen? And I mean, outside of believing, if, like, outside of thinking, if you don't believe in it, you're going to go to hell. Like, if you could just look at it and believe or not believe if you don't want to, no repercussions. Like, would that change your attitude? I mean, these religions, all they all have an origin. How about this? Having an origin, the founders are human beings with families, with friends, with social and professional business relationships, with economic commitments, and they're founding the religion that you practice in 2018. That religion may have been founded in maybe, I don't know, 1000, or maybe, like they try to tell you, in the year 1 A.D., or maybe 32 A.D. or 33 when Jesus died or something like that. Or maybe it was founded before that in Judaism. Because, like, where do you really start the roots of Christianity if Christianity comes out of Judaism? And then where does Judaism come from? Because they just say, oh, Abraham was just walking through the motherfucking wilderness or whatever of the Middle East, and all of a sudden God said, hey, what's good? I know who you are. I need to let you know who I am and what I'm about to do for you. And everybody else is going to find out because you're going to tell them, and we're going to do some real fly, cool shit. And it's going to be like, hey, not only are you going to be straight, but your kids are going to be straight, and your kids. Gonna, like, even the Bible says that that was the motivation for God coming to Abraham, was to take care of Abraham and his family, to raise him up, to elevate him. Like, I would make the argument that everything in religion is totally connected to government, because that's all religion intends to do, is to govern. More specifically, to pull together masses of people regardless of their real cultural roots, just to get groups of people to participate in a way of doing things. Operations management, if you will. But, you know, that's just me talking. But I mean, you look at the history of things like the Papal Bull of 1452, Dum de Versus, the Doctrine of Discovery. That's the Catholic Church saying, hey, go get it. If you ain't Spanish, you ain't Portuguese, you the ones that's gonna get got. You look at the Islamic conquest, Abu Bakr or Bakr, the Ridda Wars or the Apostasy Wars of 632, where, you know, after Muhammad dies, that's where the caliphate is developed, and, you know, the Muslim community is like, listen, it's going down. You're going to be a part of this thing, even if Muhammad not around. You've been a part of it, you're going to continue to be a part of it. And I mean, you know, there's hundreds of years to thousands of years even of, you know, periods of history of Islamic conflict, et cetera, just within the nation itself. When I say nation of Islam, I'm not talking about the American institution. I'm talking about the empire of Islam, okay, historical empire. But not saying that it was always about conquest, which is a bad rap, you know, that the actual religious faith gets. But that being said, might be a reason for that, not excusing it. But that's just an example of Islam and then Judaism. I mean, like I said, back to them, you know. So from the biblical storyline, you know, they tell you that God just appears out of, you know, nowhere basically to Abraham, who was Abram of Ur. And it mentions something, I guess, of his people being out of Chaldea or something like that. But I mean, you're talking about historical time periods that people who don't ascribe to these faiths have investigated. I'm sure if you've never heard, you'd be curious to hear what they have to say. Check this out.
The things that I want you to keep in mind are what we're really going to focus on today, and that is the Islamic conquests, which certainly take place partly because of religious motivation, but nevertheless are not accompanied by some fanatical desire to convert the world. The Muslim conquests have to be understood in terms of religious motivation, but not in terms of a determination to wipe out Judaism and Christianity. The paradox is that the conquests keep on going even while it would seem that religious unity is falling apart. Now, as you remember, I hope, after Muhammad's death, there was no clear succession. He didn't have a son, and it wasn't clear what anyone would succeed to. If he was the seal of the prophets, then you couldn't succeed to prophecy. Was he a religious ruler? Was he a military ruler? Was he a judicial arbitrator? His father-in-law, Abu Bakr, who we saw was one of the first of his followers, was elected caliph. Caliph meaning successor, simply. The succeeding to what was not defined, but to some kind of combination of religious and secular rule. As we said last time, religious and secular rule are in a fundamental way, not separated. Abu Bakr was elected, that is, the followers of Muhammad, the people who were thought to have the some sort of original religious authority, elected him. His rival was Ali. Ali, the cousin of Muhammad and the son-in-law at the same time of Muhammad. Ali had married Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad. But this election was not recognized by many of the tribes that had regarded their loyalty to Muhammad as personal loyalty to Muhammad, not to some institution and not to some permanent coterie of caliphs or successors. So they refused to recognize Abu Bakr's authority, and there ensued what's called the Rida, R-I-D-D-A, or apostasy, where the tribes rejected the authority of Abu Bakr, and Abu Bakr militarily compelled them back into submission or recognition of his authority. Abu Bakr ruled for less than 2 years, but he had already started on a key aspect of the Rida, the apostasy, and that is turning the resistance to the apostasy into a war against external enemies. In other words, the energy, the military energy that had to be devoted to bringing these tribes back in once they were brought in was continued to turn their military energies outward. And outward means to the north, out of the Arabian Desert, and to the direct north and slightly northeast, meaning Persia, to the northwest, meaning the Byzantine Empire. And already under Abu Bakr, it was discovered that the Byzantine Empire and the Persian Empire were hollowed out, and that what began as raids to keep these discontented tribes happy with a spot of plunder turned into a conquest.
Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky. This is a wonderful story that was told to the people in the desert in order to distract them from the fact that they did not have air conditioning.
No such thing, bad student, only bad teacher. Teacher say, student do.
But tonight I want to talk about what I shall call folk religion, although others might call it family religion or household religion. Sometimes it's opposed to what might be called official religion or state religion, but that's a false dichotomy. It's not that simple. In any case, until recently, the Hebrew Bible was really the only source we had for reconstructing ancient Israelite beliefs and practices. But about 100 years ago, archaeology began to provide new information, and in the last 20 or 30 years, it has revolutionized our understanding of Israelite religion, at least in one fashion. Now, you might think the Hebrew Bible would be an adequate source. The book is all about religion, but it isn't a good source. It's limited, and you will understand if you think about it for a moment. The Bible was written, first of all, long after most events had transpired, in some cases centuries later. Not only that, it was written by a handful of elites attached to the court and the temple in Jerusalem. It was not representative of the majority of people. And it was written by men. Do you think if we had a women's Bible, it would make any difference? Oh, yes. Yes. And finally, the Bible is an idealistic picture of what Israelite belief and practice should have been like had these fellows been in charge, but they never were. The Bible is a minority report. After the committee had done its work, this minority report tries to reconstruct religion to suit the few who wrote the Bible. So keep that in mind. Now, archaeology provides us another window through which to look at Israelite beliefs and practices, a new tool for understanding ancient Israel. And as Oded said, recently I have argued that the Bible is now a secondary source. Don't be shocked. The Bible is limited. I'm going to say something so simple it sounds silly. You cannot wring out of the biblical text any more information than there is in them. That's why it's a secondary source. But archaeology is new every day. There are fabulous discoveries being made in Israel and even in Jordan today that will change everything. So I want to describe for you as a historian what most people were actually doing in the name of their religion. One of my colleagues has said the real religion of ancient Israel is almost everything the biblical writers condemn. That's it. That's it. Now, I'm not making a judgment as to which is preferable or which is legitimate. That's for you. Consult your rabbi or priest or pastor. I'm a historian. I only want to try to describe what it was actually like for most people most of the time in ancient Israel and Judah.
The Israelite religion is one which originated out of these Bronze Age polytheistic ancient Semitic religious traditions, specifically the Canaanite religion. It exhibits a syncretization with elements from Babylonian religion as well as some Egyptian influences. The religion began as a henotheistic offshoot of the Canaanite worship of El, along with his secondary epithet, Yahweh, which refers to El Yahweh Sabaoth, often translated as Lord of Hosts, which likely means El who creates the armies. El, who was the supreme god of the Mesopotamian Semites, later became the chief god of the Hebrew Bible. In Canaan, he was known to be the father and the ruler of the divines, as well as the creator. The god of the Jews evolved gradually from the Canaanite El, who was the high god of the pantheon, to the Israelite El, who is likewise the chief god of the Hebrews. The essential qualities of the Canaanite El were retained in the god of the Hebrews, along with memories of the theogony of El and the gods. Over time, the Israelite group of Canaanites converged the sky gods El and his son Baal-Hadad, and El was conflated as Yahweh. Early on, the Israelites also worshipped Yahweh along with his wife Asherah, who was originally the consort of El in the Canaanite tradition. For a long time, scholars of the Hebrew Bible concluded that a major difference between the God of the Bible and the gods of other traditions was that so-called pagan gods had sexual lives and consorts, while Yahweh did not. But in the late 20th century, archaeologists uncovered two intriguing inscriptions from two different Middle Eastern sites. The inscriptions were blessings not only in the name of Yahweh, but also his consort, Asherah. Over time, there was a push towards monolatry, the worship of one god among many, but not necessarily denying the existence of other gods, which made it so that the Israelites' focus on El Yahweh compelled them to make it appear that there was a greater divide between Yahweh and the older god, Baal.
Now, I want you to know something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really try. I really, really try. I try to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that, but I got to tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the icecapades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong in the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. But just between you and me, and between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago.
Okay, George, I appreciate your contribution. George Carlin, ladies and gentlemen. Round of applause for George Carlin. I'm not the only one thinking this shit. Like, who goes for this? This is part of the line of reasoning that had me questioning. Like, wait a minute. Pump the brakes hard. Like, relatives going to their graves hopeful, trusting, waiting for the invisible, almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing, all everything but giving a fuck about us. Like, they die and then tell their children, hey, you do this, you do this, you do this, and in particular, of all things, worship this God, believe in him. Bang. car motherfucking crash. Reality kicked in. No airbag deployed. I'm not from that generation. I ain't had no airbags. We barely had seatbelts when I was a kid. I mean, this shit is reality, y'all. It's fabricated. It's made up. It's constructed by groups of people who lived long before you and I, yet and still you and I are living by these rules created by these groups of people. How about when you really break it down and you start looking at the construction of these ideologies / religion / schools of faith and thought? Like, the origin of many of them, they were constructed many years, if not sometimes centuries, after the death of these quote-unquote characters who may or may not even lived in some cases. I mean, this shit is like my main man said, it's the Minority Report. It's the losing team's version of what happened. Yeah, the motherfuckers who at one point was the shit, they was the bee's knees. They had control of everything, or at least what they perceived encompassed everything. And then out of nowhere, bam! Excuse me, I'm supposed to say bang. I was thinking about some John Madden shit, half looking at football. My bad. No, I'm saying though, the bang hit them. Like, you motherfuckers think you bad? Guess what? We the Roman Empire, bitch. Now what? You know what I'm saying? Like, when you look at it, man, the most powerful army's got the most powerful religion. What should I say? God. That's your God body right there. That group of human beings having the strength and knowledge and ability to control and totally alter the power structure and lifestyles of the inhabitants of another culture or civilization. That's your God body right there. Bang. You think you're alive, but you'll be the walking dead. Because your life is no longer your own. You no longer have the liberal control to do what you want to do. At best, you have an appearance of such. I mean, that's just if you think of it in terms of, you know, world war games, you know. But, you know, on an individual level, we always have choice. And that's why I present these questions in this arena. Because for those of us interested in choosing to do something different than the bullshit we've been subjugated to, like, it starts inside. Every prisoner can find an escape. Something to think about. Ask El Chapo. And he got some shit, you know what I mean? He knew what he was doing. And you ain't always gotta be rich. Sometimes the riches can be in other things, you know what I'm saying? Not always necessarily economic wealth. But that's for another conversation or another episode at another time. I'm trying to get us to think about the constructs, the devising of these concepts that rule people's lives in unnatural ways. These are not rules that are glued to the heart of every man or woman as they come out of the womb. These are ideas and philosophies that are not just taught, but imposed, because fractions of society are aggressively, let's say, proselytizing their messages. So much so that in some countries, motherfuckers is just getting killed. Oh, you ain't down with this? You ain't down with G-O-D? Bitch, you ain't got no time to respond. You don't even look like you was going to say yes. You ain't look like you was going to say, you know me. Nah, you was very frank. Off with your motherfucking head. Bang! The Big Bang Theory is this construct by we, you, me, God bodies, moving all at one time. I mentioned earlier in episode 3, it's like the metaphysical universe, the atoms, the protons, the neutrons, all coexisting simultaneously, spinning around in fucking circles in this microscopic universe that we can't see, but it's vast, endless. It exists apparently according to what we're taught scientifically and religiously. What do you mean religiously? Another episode, another time. It exists. it's at least explained in those terms, that these small elements that come together to create the visible world. Yeah, social constructs are operating outside of them or on top of them, or even in some cases in tandem, but in other cases in opposition towards them. And many of us common folk, born into whatever societal construct you born into, pull further and further away from your natural man to become modified and more like a artificial man or woman. Like my man Grandma Under Surveillance said, we already cyborgs. Fucking got us connected to all kinds of laptops and computers and shit. Motherfuckers already got emotional attachments. They can't live without their piece of technology. It's almost like the technology has become the replacement for the human heart. And of course, not the biological heart, but the, I guess, emotional, psychological heart. Another episode. Just trying to make a point that no matter where you look in life, you see the fingerprints of other human beings influencing what you're dealing with as reality. So let's stop ignoring it. Human beings frame these religious schools of thought. And any human being who was a member of this team of structuring, you know, you don't belong to that bloodline. For example, we would like to think hypothetically, Judaism, the descendants of Abraham would have, out of faith and out of their testimony to their life stories, they'd be putting together the story of the origins of Judaism. Henceforth, Torah, Talmud, and all that other stuff, right? And you'd say, well, yeah, if that is the case, if this is true, this is true factual evidence, and these documents are really historical documents, I promise you, most people today who claim to be Jews, is more of them by conversion than by birth. There was only 12 tribes. You know what I'm saying? Well, that just means that over time they would have multiplied. Well, oh my God, man, don't make me go that way right now. I'm trying to make a point because I know this point is so valid. You don't descend from none of them 12 freaking tribes. Chances are, especially if you're here in America, you're a convert. And if you converted, you ain't a natural born Jew. You just a Jew by your thoughts and by your description of yourself. In a similar way into which these men run around saying, I'm a woman. Or these women run around saying, I'm a man. Because I feel like on the inside I was born outside. Whatever the fuck it is they think. And I mean, hey, look, they entitled to think what they want. I'm just telling you the way I'm going to see it. I don't want to shower with another man, but I wouldn't have a problem showering with a woman. Even if I thought she wasn't attractive. I just say, hey, you stay on your side. Bring your soap, I keep my soap. I don't want none of that ugly rubbing off on me. It's a joke, haha. But that being said, if you say that you are something, that doesn't necessarily mean you are something. Like, just ascribing to it is just really saying, all right, I give up. I don't want to fight with y'all. Okay, Judaism wins. Islam wins. Christianity wins. Come on, we know there's no way in the world you could claim to be of the fucking bloodline of Jesus motherfucking Christ. This dude didn't have no fucking kids. So how is anybody claiming to be Christian? Other than the people who was in on it with him. The disciples, air quotes. And I mean, naturally, the descendants and close affiliates of the founders of these religions are going to support and uphold the religions. They're going to benefit from doing so. What don't make sense to me is that so many centuries later, in this era of advanced technology, how these institutions and ideologies continue to keep approximately 5 billion plus people repeatedly coming to their places of worship, repeatedly giving them of the money that they struggling and scraping to obtain, still continue to deal with their own personal hardships, but they're going to give up their own little bit that they have to these organizations that are tax exempt most of the time. Working in tandem with the governments under which they find safety and security. And people just rocking out like, oh yeah, it ain't no such thing as science. Ain't no such thing as archaeology. Ain't no such thing as anthropology, geology, biology, chemistry, radiology. Do I gotta find another ology to throw in this motherfucker for y'all to get the point? All this data and info and further evidence to expose that these modern day mythologies are being legally sold to the oppressed masses. It's truth. Like, come on, man. Y'all fucking heartless fucking bastards. Man, like, it just makes me ask the question.
What does it mean to be human?
I mean, seriously, thanks again, Dr. Cornell West. I mean, keeping us on track. What does it mean to be human? I mean, it's a key part of it is having a mom and a dad. You heard one of the lecturers mention how the evolution of Yahweh, prior to Yahweh, you know, being worshipped by the Israelites who were, you know, some kind of way fucking neighbors, if not related to the Canaanites. I mean, like, Yahweh had a fucking wife, the goddess Asherah. So no wonder the Israelite prophet Moses had no problem with writing a bill of divorce, because his God, Yahweh, apparently said, fuck this bitch. She's nagging the fuck out of me. She's trying to figure out why I'm spending all this time with these motherfucking Jews. I'm trying to tell her, don't believe everything you hearing in the news. They not as bad as everybody say. I got plans for them. I'm going to turn them into motherfucking stars, starting with my man David, ending things off with the boy Jesus, potentially. We still not sure about him, but even still, we got another plan for him. But I'm Yahweh. I am that I am. Why are you asking me questions? Bitch. I mean, that's just how it probably went down. That's how I imagine. But I'm saying, like, yeah, this Yahweh boy, he come to find out the Jews just, like, took his fucking framework and just said, all right, we're going to build off this, but we're going to do it the way we want it. Because we ain't trying to hear all this women having power shit. And they remind me of how the Romans was, like, with the research I found about Cleopatra. Like, they didn't like the idea of her being such a powerful, like, fucking ruler of Egypt and threatening, you know, to have some powerful stake in the Roman Empire when she was dealing with Caesar and Mark Anthony. That's crazy. That's just crazy how deep this shit is. Like, what does it mean to be human? Human shit. That's what the fuck it means to be human. They're gonna do human things. So when you look at the course of recorded history, you see these recurring themes and these recurring behaviors in this species of what is called human beings. And I mean, when you look at the Bible compared to the rest, or if you take the Bible out and put a different religious text in and compare it to the rest, it's gonna give you a more broader picture of what's really going on with everything. So when it's all said and done, these religious organizations, these ideologies, these churches, these constructs, they come from people. And people are teaching people who are new people. It's like a fucking job. It's like it's OJT. Like, the people that have been here for a while is teaching the new motherfucking hires. And you know, your career success is going to totally be impacted by the type of training and instruction that you receive in life. I mean, when you look at the history of, you know, these religions, as mentioned in one of the other lectures, it demonstrates that there's not really a big separation between secular and religious when it comes to the management of affairs on the world level, on the macro economic level. Because the mathematics are the same. These people who are in control of the things that they are in control of, they've been in control of them for so long, they would never even entertain the idea of doing life in a different way. It's too pleasant for them the way that it is currently. And so many of us who are born into this world without a lot of economic or socioeconomic advantages as far as wealth, etc., you know, we don't understand the macro game, because we all start off on the micro level. And I mean, shit, it sucks ass in some levels, but on another level, maybe it's liberating. Maybe you don't have to be locked into that way of thinking if you just happen to have an incident that is like a car crash. You get that back. It could be a new life. It could be a new perspective on the world, and maybe even the beginning of creating a new world. Something to consider.
God don't live in church. They say the body is the temple. I'm walking in church right now.
Number 8, Eddie Griffin. Eddie Griffin is not, I repeat, not an atheist. But that doesn't mean he can't criticize religion. Now, does it? You don't have to be a non-believer. Speak the truth.
It starts out messed up in the beginning, in the book of Genesis. In the beginning, there was Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve had two sons, Cain and Abel. And Cain and Abel got married. To who? Where did these mystery bitches come from? I like messing with Christians, but... because they're easy to get. You know, they scared quick, you know. You know, I tell a person in a minute, I'm like, I don't believe Jesus died on no cross. Happening. I said, well, wait a minute. He can walk on water, feed a thousand with a loaf of bread, raise the dead, but you telling me this nigga couldn't handle three meals? I know brothers with 9 bullet wounds still walking around. His name is 50 Cent. You telling me
50
Cent calling him Jesus?
Sacrilege. 50 Cent called him Jesus. Shit, 50 Cent, either he God, or that motherfucker that shot him 9 times wasn't no fucking sniper. But either way, motherfucker still called him Jesus. That's just documented. That's not my opinion. That's pound for pound. You take 3 nails versus 9 bullets. Come on, man. I take the 3 nails, nigga. Give me the 3 nails. If I get to pick 2, it's gonna be fuck nails. It'll be thumbtacks, nigga. Real talk. Fuck out of here. 50 Cent is God, according to the record. I mean, if the Bible is fact. I'm not saying it don't have some factual information, but I'm saying as a whole. Do your research. It's like the boy said, is the elite got together, do a couple scripts together. Said this shit worked. I mean, when you do the research and you start looking at how much shit that the Bible references that should not have existed in the time period in which the text was referring to. But, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just talking this crazy shit. I'm just talking this foolishness. Am I? Or is it foolishness that I don't really got to even get into the crusade? I don't got to get into all the shit that is done in the name of Jesus. You know what I'm saying? I definitely ain't talking about the good shit. I ain't talking about healing the sick and raising the dead, quote unquote, which we can't find but so much proof of this shit, if any. But I'm talking about the shit that, you know, transatlantic slave trades and crusades and shit like that. Yeah, that type shit. We can find all kinds of evidence of that. Not to mention the good old boys, the Pope and his Catholic Church, and the shit they like to do. But I let my man, the specialist, the motherfuckers who got a little bit more information on it, break it down for you.
I would love to have the faith
to believe that it took place in 7 days, but I have thoughts. And that can really fuck up the faith thing. Just ask any Catholic priest. I was raised Catholic until I was about 10, and then I quit because my parents let me. But I was always amazed. I don't really know anything about the Catholic Church. It's an enormous institution, total mystery.
Number 2, Louis C.K. Probably one of the most popular comedians in the world about the Catholic Church.
So what is the Catholic Church? What are you guys all about?
Okay. The Catholic Church is an ancient, worldwide organization dedicated to the constant goal of fucking young boys.
Really? Sure. Wow. I thought everybody knew that. Well, I thought that the point of the church was to worship God, and the boy fucking was just incidental. No, it's just the other way around. The point of the church is the boy fucking. All the other stuff is just busy work. Okay, so how did it work? Well, you stick your dick up their ass. No. I mean, as an organization, why do you need a whole church just to do that?
You see, you can't just go around fucking boys in the street. People get mad. So what we do is we build churches around the world and tell people they gotta come there to pray, give us their money, or they'll go straight to hell. Now that gives us the authority and the gravitas to control their lives. Most importantly, to give us their young boys. So we can educate them, feed them, and ultimately fuck them in the ass and face.
Here's something else to consider. Actually, a couple more things. One, that question I asked earlier about how long have you been believing things about the world the way you've been believing it. I know I just fucked up the way I stated it, but you get the gist. Second thing to consider is, all right, well, if you're human and the world works a certain way for you, why doesn't it really work that way for everybody that's human? I mean, take away some of the economic advantages, like everybody's got hunger, everybody gets tired, everybody gets upset, everybody's happy, everybody's sad. You know, the dynamic plethora of emotions that human beings go through, like, aren't we all subject to them? How about how people get ahead in the world? I know I kind of just jumped all over the place, but hey, protons, electrons, atoms, we moving. How about people we consider successful? Like, do they really do it on their own, pull themselves up by their bootstraps and just make their way in the world? Or do a lot of these motherfuckers who we consider wealthy wake up with a motherfucking silver spoon, a silver fork, a silver knife, a silver fucking plate, a silver bell to ring for the butler with a silver fucking tie and a silver tuxedo on with a silver fucking buffet platter at a silver table in a fucking silver dining room with a silver fucking curtains over the silver windows with the silver motherfucking lining outside with the silver sun shining through the fucking window? Y'all think I'm just saying this shit because I'm bitter. I'm not. I'm just saying this is what I'm seeing from the research. You know, when you look at how religions are supposed to impact people, it just seems like they don't really seem to impact most people really much at all other than routine. And I mean that means you're going to spend a portion of your free time, quote unquote, it should have been free when you're not working. You're going to spend that time getting fucking indoctrinated. Or doing something connected to supporting the church or mosque or fucking a synagogue or whatever, temple, whatever. You're going to support something else besides you and your family. And you're going to learn about somebody else besides you and your family and your origins and your history. Unless, of course, you own the motherfucker. But other than that, you can get indoctrinated into how to live your life in terms of somebody else's ideals. Motherfuck your personal needs. They're wrong. They're sinful. They are against what God has wanted for you, even though he made you capable of having them. Probably really should be blamed for putting them in you, but we can't blame God for that. Fuck no, don't do that shit. Going straight to hell, wherever that is. You sure we ain't already there? Sick with it. Sorry, sometimes I gotta tell that motherfucker to cool out. Sometimes. But I mean, is it a stretch? I mean, come on, I just told you in 1452, the priest of the Catholic Church, the Pope, document, decree, fucking dumb diverses, doctrine of discovery. You ain't Catholic? Oh, motherfucking well. Doctrine of discovery, bitch. This is the doctrine. We about to go to some, discover some shit. But we was already here. And we feel as though we didn't know how much we was going to like it when we got here. We didn't realize how much we wasn't going to like y'all. So We discovered it. Fuck off. Bang. Dead, bitch. Got your ass now. I mean, you alive, but you dead. Ain't shit you can do about this. But again, like I said, it ain't just one. You can go across the board. Now, I didn't even get into too much about with the... Just a little bit on the whole Islamic stuff. Didn't get too much into the Jewish stuff. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, listen. I felt as though I should probably say the best for last. These motherfuckers is fucking genius. That's why I said they in third, but secretly very influential. Fucking powerful third place. They still pulling the fucking puppet strings. If you understand the history... And the fucking genealogy of the religions, even the Abrahamic faiths, fucking Abraham, Big Daddy, fucking Godfather of it all, you know what I'm saying? And the Christians is like the beloved kid, Solomon, and the Muslims, fucking hated step half baby, you know, what was it, Esau, or no, not Esau, fucking Ishmael, my bad. Told y'all I'm gonna be like. Let me worry about them details like that. I know what I'm talking about, though. If you don't like my details, do your research. If you like my details, do your research. Do your research. Check it out for yourself. You're going to find some shit that I'm not going to look up. Break bread. Show love. Tell me something. Just don't come talking no bullshit. Because I get them. Sick with it. Doing a podcast over here. All right, man. My bad. But back to the saving the best for last. Couldn't end it without talking about the influence of, you know, the Jewish faith. I mean, because when you look at the Jewish faith, you know, probably the single most influential, I would like to identify it as a modern day Roman Empire, if you will. I mean, it's just amazing. It's awesome in the like purest form of the sense of the word. Like, it's breathtaking when you think about the magnitude to which the organization of control has been established. I mean, it's just, it's not haphazard at all. But let's look at what I've been saying about the influence of these ideologies, institutions, and how they can affect your concept or the construct of the world as you see it. When you start to understand how much influence just one family can have. All because of their faith. Bang.
All banks have histories, though not all have their histories researched and written. Only the Rothschilds, however, have a mythology. The world's banker. The Rothschilds are the wonders of modern banking. We see the descendants of Judah, for a persecution of 2,000 years, peering above kings, rising higher than emperors, and holding a whole continent in the hollow of their hands. The Rothschilds govern a Christian world. Not a cabinet moves without their advice. They stretch their hand with equal ease from Petersburg to Vienna, from Vienna to Paris, from Paris to London, from London to Washington. Baron Rothschild, the head of the house, is the true king of Judah, the prince of the captivity. The Messiah so long looked for by this extraordinary people. He holds the keys of peace or war, blessing or cursing. They are the brokers and counselors of the kings of Europe and of the Republican chiefs of America. What more can they desire? Niles Weekly Register, 1835-36.
Now let's take a look at the role of the Rothschild family, the family said to be the wealthiest in the world.
Money is the god of our time, and Rothschild is his prophet. Heinrich Heine. The mythology surrounding the Rothschilds' wealth and power is 2 centuries old. The resulting mythology has proved almost as long-lived as the firm of N.M. Rothschild & Sons itself. Ever since the second decade of the 19th century, there has been speculation about the origins and extent of the family's wealth, about their political influence, not only in the 5 countries where there were Rothschild houses, but throughout the world, about their Judaism. The five Rothschild houses constitute an early version of what later became known as the multinational. Perhaps the most important point to grasp about this multinational partnership is that for most of the century between 1815 and 1914, it was easily the biggest bank in the world. Strictly in terms of their combined capital, the Rothschilds were in a league of their own until, at the earliest, the 1880s. The 20th century has no equivalent. Because they were so rich, the Rothschilds could plainly claim a material equivalence with the European aristocracy. They relished the sense that they were sans pareil. In this sense, phrases like kings of the Jews, which contemporaries applied to them, contained an important element of truth. That was exactly the way the Rothschilds saw and conducted themselves. There are no fewer than 153 species or subspecies of insect which bear the name Rothschild, as well as 58 birds, 18 mammals, and 14 plants, including a rare slipper orchid, Paphiopedilum Rothschildianum, to say nothing of 3 fish, 3 spiders, and 2 reptiles. The family's almost equally recurrent enthusiasm for the pleasures of the table has also bestowed the name on a souffle and a savory, prawns, cognac, and Gruyere on toast. There are towns and numerous streets named after members of the family in Israel, Rothschild-owned vineyards at Mouton and Lafitte whose wines are drunk the world over, numerous Rothschild-built houses from the Vale of Aylesbury to the Riviera, and there is even a Rothschild island in the Antarctic.
Freaking island in the Antarctic. Oh, there's more.
Even as late as the first decade of the 20th century, the system of partnerships continued to function in such a way that English Rothschilds had a financial stake in the Paris house and French Rothschilds a stake in the London house. The history of the Rothschilds also helps to illuminate the long-running differences between British, French, and German banking, for the obvious reason that the various Rothschild houses worked in similar, though not identical, ways in each country. In addition to the inevitable web of credits and debits with other firms which arose from these activities, the Rothschilds also offered to a select group of customers, usually royal and aristocratic individuals whom they wished to cultivate, a range of personal banking services, ranging from large personal loans, as in the case of the Austrian Chancellor Prince Metternich, to a first-class private postal service, as in the case of Queen Victoria. And the Rothschilds were also major industrial investors, an aspect of their business which has often been underestimated. When the development of railways raised the possibility of transforming Europe's transport system in the 1830s and 1840s, the Rothschilds were among the leading financial backers of lines, beginning in France, Austria, and Germany. Indeed, by the 1860s, James de Rothschild had built up something like a pan-European railway network, extending northwards from France to Belgium, southwards to Spain, and eastwards to Germany, Switzerland, Austria, and Italy. From an early stage, the Rothschilds also had major mining interests, beginning in the 1830s, with their acquisition of the Spanish mercury mines of Almaden, and expanding dramatically in the 1880s and 1890s, when they invested in mines producing gold, copper, diamonds, rubies, and oil. Like their original financial business, this was an authentically global operation extending from South Africa to Burma, from Montana to Baku. Unlike modern multinationals, however, this was always a family firm, with executive decision-making strictly monopolized by the partners, who, until 1960, were exclusively drawn from the ranks of male Rothschilds. There are numerous apocryphal business maxims attributed to the Rothschilds. For example, to hold a third of one's wealth in securities, a third in real estate, and a third in jewels and artworks. To treat the stock exchange like a cold shower, quick in, quick out. Or to leave the last 10% to someone else. The economic history of capitalism is therefore incomplete until some attempt has been made to explain how the Rothschilds became so phenomenally rich. All 19th century states ran budget deficits, and some almost always did. And it was war and the preparation for war which generally precipitated the biggest increases in expenditure. For it was by lending to governments or by speculating in existing government bonds that the Rothschilds made a very large part of their colossal fortune.
Okay, as a disclaimer, this is not an attempt to shit on the Rothschilds or Judaism as a whole. This is just giving you access to the information I'm getting access to. This is just giving you some of the thoughts that I'm kind of having, but is other people putting in their words, because apparently they're having similar thoughts. Oh, there's so much more.
The answer lies in the way these investments were carried out. Only a few years previously, Meyer Amschel had been arranging payments of some 620,000 gulden from the elector to Austria to pay for troops and horses in the 1809 campaign against France. Shortly after Meyer Amschel's death, his son Amschel was advancing 255,000 gulden to purchase horses for the French army. He simply backed both sides. Such a strategy has obvious attractions, and it was to become a frequent Rothschild gambit in the decades ahead. Amschel was only half joking when he wrote, urging Solomon, "Do your stuff. Make the Frankfurt house richer by 1,000,000 francs, the Paris house richer by 1,000,000 louis d'or, and the London house richer by 1,000,000 pounds, and you'll be awarded the Order of the Grande Armée." A cursory search of the internet reveals a plethora of conspiracy theories. The Rothschilds arranged the murder of President Lincoln, as his post-war policies would have wrecked their commodity speculations. The Rothschilds financed the rise of Hitler as a bulwark against the Soviet Union. The Rothschilds are interwoven with the Catholic Church, and jointly with the traditional mafia and the American CIA, which was pro-Nazi. They are the hidden power which controls other well-known banks, such as Warburg's, Schroeder's, and Lazar's, as well as being behind American financiers such as J.P. Morgan, the Rockefellers, Kuhn, Loeb and Company, the Spires and the Lehmans, not to mention the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve System, an obvious Rothschild front. Through this network of global power, they have been responsible for, among other things, the Boer War, the creation of Israel to control the oil of the Middle East, the Russian Revolution, a coup on Russia by the United States financial arm largely controlled by the Rothschilds, and even the floating of the dollar by President Nixon. Today, they and their associates in the Conservative Party and the press are plotting to monopolize the world's energy supplies, hence their interest in electricity, coal, and gas privatization. It might be thought that a serious banking history should scrupulously avoid reference to this kind of nonsense. Yet it is impossible to appreciate the need for a scholarly history of the subject if one blithely pretends such myths do not exist.
You know, that's a good point, you know. Speculation, again, conspiracies, you know. How can we allow ourselves, if we're rational human beings, to think that, you know, something that is legitimate could be involved in any way with something that is illegitimate? Perish the thought. I think that's what creates the psychological phenomenon known as cognitive dissonance, something we experience as human beings. But the reality is that the two are related. I'm of the school of thought that these rumors don't just arise out of nowhere. Like, nobody running around saying that Sick with it was responsible for the Battle of Waterloo. Well, my relatives. Why? Because I've been told that my relatives probably came from Africa. Probably. Well, no, actually, I was told that they did come from Africa in school. But, you know, further research has come to show that not likely. But we don't believe in conspiracies. Not us rational thinking people. Why would we ever think that the government would conspire to mislead its people? Friggin', we need to listen to someone with a little bit more wisdom, a little bit more sage advice to offer.
Balanced Keith, Balance good, karate good, everything good. Balance bad, better pack up go home. Understand?
Understand, Miyaga-san.
Oh.
No, real shit though. Like, yeah, I get it. Balance. We gotta remain balanced. So speaking of balance, I'm gonna give you something, leave you with something in the balance to think about. I mean, all of these religions, you know, they're not the cause of the discord in the world, but they definitely play a big part. They're definitely all complicit, especially in their intentions to promote ideologies of monotheism, if you will, or monotheology, if I may. It's not room. It's not allowing room for the diversity and the plurality of what we call life. And, you know, it's definitely contributing to a lot of the conflict, but history has shown that the conflict existed before these religions did. So let's not fool ourselves. Let's not put all the blame on the constructs, but let's just reexamine both the historical aspects in our life, you know, in our lives, respectively. Let's look at how what's happened in our individual experiences has been impacted by these thoughts, these schools of thought, and let's stop perpetuating the bullshit. Because there's some real good shit that you can take away from any of them. But in terms of the stuff where, you know, we're reinforcing the idea that the execution of justice is going to remain in the future and be the responsibility of some invisible deity, that's not fair to us as a civilization, as a species. I mean, especially not to our offspring. It's causing or definitely severely contributing to the circumstances in which we live today. We need more balance. We need to get back in touch more with our humanity. It's ironic and amazing at the same time that with all the advancements we've made scientifically, we haven't considered how it's most likely pulling us away from the core of our construct, the core of our humanity, and thereby contributing to the externalities of society. It's breaking us down to come up with all this great shit, but not really think about the human beings who are going to be using the great shit. If I could put it that way. We need more balance. Stop looking to keep building a whole bunch of machines and technology and start thinking about all these different species of flora and fauna that are going extinct because of our activity. Those are some real severe things that we should consider. And also consider the fact that the reasons that a lot of this shit is happening is because of the way we see things and the way we look at the world. It's not enough humanity involved. It's not enough balance. We need more balance. In the meantime, we gotta understand that we are off balance and that we're the common person is fighting an uphill battle because we're in the middle of a holy war. We've been thrust right in the middle of it. And we're being forced to choose sides that we didn't have no participation in creating or determining the terms of this employment or contract or form of labor. It's just like, hey, fucking ride or die. Yeah, that's not humane. That's not civil anyway. Maybe it is humane, but it damn sure ain't civil. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's legal. Rules of engagement. Well, again, human beings create this. We can find shit. If we can manage to create the Olympics, why can't we manage a way to deal with all of our conflict like more civilly? So everybody's not gonna go for it. Probably not. We could teach them how to color in between the lines though. And even better, we can put them in a space where they can create their own fucking lines. But if we do that, then we'll have to watch them all the time because they'll be trying to take over the world. Yeah. God forbid somebody takes over the world. Shit. What the fuck is wrong with these people? As if that was even possible. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's just my thoughts, and I'm the one that's talking crazy. But, again, maybe we need to refer to the sage wisdom of our, you know, good instructor and minister of civility, you know, Mr. Miyagi. Maybe he'd give us some advice. Because my thing is, it's a lot of people in positions of authority, and people got all these fucking certifications and authorizations and licenses, but, you know, they don't necessarily mean they're the best motherfuckers for the job. Like, everybody got a right to govern their own life. That's part of being God body. You shouldn't have no more right to kill me or impede me or stop me than I have to do to you. And granted, you know, how do you deal with, you know, crime and all that shit? Hey, listen, that shit got to be a real individualized basis. I mean, it is already anyway. So when you get to the overarching structures of societal management, like, come on, that shit has got to be oppressive because it doesn't give a fuck about the human element at that point. It only gives a fuck about the societal element. As soon as you get there, shit is already on a fucking downhill slope to you know where. That's just my thoughts. What you think, Mr. Miyagi?
Just remember, license never replace eye, ear, and brain.